I'm David Barsamian. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, and the time is 9:59. Coming up at 10:15, Flashpoints presents more coverage from Delano, California, at the 50th anniversary celebration of the grape strike that gave rise to the UFW. At 11, on stage and studio, host Dime Roberts talks with director Rusty Newton Tennant about Rope, an early play that Alfred Hitchcock turned into one of his most experimental films, and with playwright David Henry Wong about the production of his one-act play, The Sound of a Voice, at Portland Center Stage. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Andre Middleton speaks with Indigenous artist Natalie Ball about her installation art that examines discourses that shape Indian identity. Stay tuned for Air Cascadia with host Chris Andre following this.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 6th Annual Teaching with Purpose Conference on October 9th and 10th at Park Rose Middle School, located at 11800 Northeast Shaver Street, Portland, Oregon. The Teaching with Purpose Conference provides information, tools, and materials relating to culturally responsive teaching. The conference aims to address legislation relating to culturally responsive education in Oregon and around the country. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Tuesday, October 6th, 2015, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Coming up, today's guest is Chris Wald. He's a professor of law at Lewis and Clark College. He specializes in, what should we call the Trans-Pacific Partnership that we can actually say on the air? I personally can't think of anything. He, nonetheless, Chris Wald, dives in deep and examines the below ground, the subterranean architecture of creatures like the Trans-Pacific Partnership. We now, of course, know that it has passed. We still don't learn what's in it. Very few people, including the articles I looked at, the New York Times, the Washington Post. I could go on and on naming papers of record that report on what the event has actually happened, but not what that consists of. So we know it passed. We still know very little about it. And what has been presented to us, the PAP in mainstream media, has not been very helpful or instructive as we go forward. People still don't realize that despite what they say, jobs will disappear. There will be left with low-paying service sector jobs, but that's going to be about it. The environment is pretty much doomed, and our financial institutions will be undermined in irreversible ways. The damage that this is going to cause is not something that we will be able to redress. So that said, we will be speaking shortly with Chris Wald to straighten some of this out for us. I do want to bring up a couple of things. Down in, we know again that another really serious disaster in Coos Bay, Jordan Cove, of course, it's really time to let Governor Brown know that people are watching and they are paying attention, and we do expect her to take action to challenge the feds and stand up for Oregon. She has the power to stop this from happening. She is going to be running for governor. Make that very, very clear when you call her office that your decisions will largely be based on her decisions. There's the SHN Consulting on drilling Coos Bay at the Jordan Cove site next week. Yesterday, DEQ received a work plan, which was I'm going to quote here, for further characterization of historical petroleum releases on the site, close those quotes, and figure out how much contamination there actually is. But, wait a minute, no contamination should be allowed anywhere along our coasts. That's we have laws that have been set up for precisely that reason. After the Confederated Tribes of Coos, Lower Umpqua, and Suisla Indians' letter to FERC, they called on SHN to halt any drilling before permits have been issued. See, all of this stuff is taking place before permits are issued because corporations know that they all they have to do is whisper the word, and laws are flipped to make it convenient for them to drill. The work is it's incredible. If we did not, in fact, have First Nations who stand up to agencies such as FERC and say, no, permits have not been issued and you're not going to be doing it here, this company, SHN, can decide how much or how little they want to do and how much they want to involve the DEQ. They could go forward and do the work because the regulatory program is voluntary, but they're choosing not to go ahead with the drilling, largely because of this letter from the Confederated Tribes. Think about that one. We have the fact that last Saturday a hospital was bombed in Syria by U.S. planes. The madness has escalated to a point where we lack the words to describe it. The rest of the world is watching closely as America slowly goes completely berserk. The killings constantly. Now another report out of Philadelphia, and then, of course, the hospital murders. This is some people burning in their beds. Medecin Sans Frontières pulled out. Now what's going to happen to people? Thousands of people crowding hospital rooms. Because of what? Because of the, again, missteps that the U.S. made all across the Middle East, which has caused, of course, to implode in horrific, deadly ways, such as the bombing of the hospital. They were calling. It went on for half an hour. People in the hospital were desperately calling and saying, stop bombing us. And they continued, despite protests from people there attending their patients as the patients burned in their beds. That's America for you. Now let's go to Chris Wald. Thank you very much for being patient, Chris. We had some pretty real stunners of headlines to make it through, but this really is the biggest of them all. I, over the last year or so, have looking at this, reporting on this, welcoming guests to speak to the issue, have been so overwhelmed with the scope of the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the irreparable damage that it will do, not just to communities, cities, states, countries, but to the planet itself. And now it goes, of course, courts across the world are going to have to muster their best minds to try to come up with some way to counter this. Good morning, Chris. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
You know, of course, this is your area of expertise, and you have been following the Trans-Pacific Partnership, its evolution, insofar as we are able to, given the lack of details. This past, can you talk a bit about the legal architecture that allowed this to happen and why these countries see it as in their best interests to sign on? What can we do? That's one question. And later on, I do want to ask you what we do about it now, what we do next.
Sure. So the answer to how we came to this point where the negotiations happen largely in secret and with little congressional oversight, is really the result of a constitutional compromise between the president on the one hand and Congress on the other. The president, of course, has the authority to enter into international agreements, but Congress has commerce authority, right, to regulate trade with foreign countries. So how are we going to ensure that Congress has its role to play and that the president has his role to play? And the compromise was what we call today trade promotion authority, what we used to call fast track, where the president, where Congress has essentially agreed to give the president authority to negotiate these agreements with very little public oversight, but there is supposed to be congressional oversight. And then Congress, in return, Congress says, okay, we will take a look at the agreement and give you an up or down vote within a relatively short period of time. And why Congress has agreed to essentially leave the public out of this, and why the president also agrees that this has to happen in secret is frankly a bit of a mystery, right? Because we don't conduct other kinds of negotiations in such secrecy. If we compare what's happening in the climate change context right now, the current draft negotiating text is on the website of the official climate change secretariat, right? The body that is assisting countries negotiate the agreement. So we can speculate why we have such secrecy, but it would really be just that, speculation. But it is certainly a different culture, the trade world, in terms of the secrecy. We have much more transparency in other fora.
Why is that?
Yeah, I just don't know. I mean, maybe it's the commercial interests involved, but I don't know. I mean, there's certainly. You can't argue that trade negotiations are more complex than, say, the climate change negotiations. In the climate change negotiations, we're negotiating really the fundamental aspects of our economy. Is it going to be fossil fuel driven, or is it going to be driven by renewables? And how do we achieve that? And there are all kinds of different complex issues being negotiated, including how we deal with land use change and greenhouse gas emissions from the way we manage our forests or our agricultural systems. Right? So, you know, just as complex, if not more complex, in the climate change negotiations, which are very transparent. The governments just had a negotiating round where representatives from non-governmental organizations were able to participate, make interventions that is speak to governments in the formal part of the talks, see all the documents, and all those documents, as I said, are on the website of the convention.
I know. I love it. Yeah. So this thing, it seems to be impervious to legal challenge at this point. I refuse to believe that there is not some means by which it might controlled, contained, damaged, some of the things that could happen to the environment if if parts of this thing is invoked in order to, this looks like a public domain. This is something else. This is like beyond anything we've ever seen before in the environmental protection in the community, where people are concerned about what we're doing to the planet. It seems there must be a means whereby legal challenges could be launched to stop this from permitting corporations to take land, forests, rivers, water, in the case of Nestle, here up in the, you know. Is there a way at all that these corporate interests could be stopped now that this thing has passed? Or can the town specific partnership itself be pulled back? Is there any, what can we do?
So at this point, the options are quite limited. So it's important to realize that the agreement has been adopted, but there, at least in the United States, is the critical next step of having the president and the United States Trade Representative draft legislation to implement the agreement. Right, the agreement doesn't just come into force under U.S. law. There has to be legislation that Congress passes. And, of course, that legislation must be faithful to the agreement as adopted. But Congress still has to pass it. And if people want to stop this agreement, then the way to do it is to convince Congress not to adopt the legislation needed to enter the agreement into force for the United States.
Chris, hang on there. I apologize. We are out of time here today. This has been enormously helpful. I want to thank you so much for joining us on Air Cascadia today. It's very, quite likely we'll be calling you back as things develop and we start trying to hash out exactly what Congress's actions mean and how we can influence decisions being made in D.C. Thanks again. My guest, of course, has been Chris Wald, Professor of Law at Lewis and Clark College. This has been Air Cascadia for Tuesday, October 6th, 2015. Janet Engines, Anderson engineered the show for us today. Thanks, Janet. Kathleen Stevenson, of course, is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights.